This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, Ti Xiaoyik. It's our mental health series called Mind Matters Today. And today we are looking at, you know, what is community mental health? So mental health, you know, as we often talk about it in the course of our daily conversations, we usually refer to illnesses like depression or bipolar disorder. But it's not just about that. It also refers to the stresses you face in your daily life and your resilience in overcoming these challenges. And the thing is, you may not immediately think of mental health being even linked to issues like poverty, welfare, or even parenting problems. But these socioeconomic issues that are faced by the communities across the board, but particularly those in the low income bracket, they do serve as risk factors for mental health problems and often have to be addressed by community services before you can start talking about mental health interventions. And so on the Mind Matters series, we will be featuring Souls Health and their community partners to look at how they address mental health problems, especially in the B40 community, through the lens of these socioeconomic issues. So joining us today, we have the Managing Director of Souls Health, Alicia Othman, as well as Anita Ahmad, the Senior Vice President, Head of Community Development of Yayasan Hasana, a partner group, a partner organization with Souls Health. We'll be hearing about how both these organizations work together to address community mental health issues. If you have any questions, you can call us. Our lines are open, 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon, Alicia and Anita. How are you both today?
Good, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Alicia, perhaps you can start by telling us more about Souls Health and what exactly you do.
Okay. Souls Health is a community-oriented mental health centre under the Souls 247 Foundation. And our vision is to build healthy and inclusive communities. So if you notice, we don't have the mental health word in that vision, because we're focusing much on community health, whereby strengthening and empowering communities by looking at the strength of these connections in the communities, the resource that they have. And the other part about the inclusivity is to develop mental health practitioners who understand these social and community development issues. Because very often, mental health practitioners focus very much, as you mentioned earlier, on the illness or disorders, but not looking at the underlying contributors or risk factors of mental health.
I mean, addressing the mental health disorders obviously is very important, of course, but is it right that if I say that, in fact, that's sort of the tip of the iceberg, or that's already sort of we've reached almost like a crisis point, and there's a lot more that you could do to help people address their daily challenges way before we get to that point? Am I right in saying that?
Yes. What you shared about the treatment in terms of the mental illness or disorders is very much focused on the symptom reduction. So that's the, I guess, the biomedical model, right? Treatment through medication and also psychotherapy to some extent. However, usually these treatments are provided, you know, in weekly or, you know, once in 2 week basis. And in the public service, very often because of, you know, overburden, under resource, it does take quite some time. So we the full recovery that is needed in terms of the support of the, not just the individual. So when we look at the individual factors, so the biomedical model is important, but psychosocial, spiritual aspect of the individual. So cultural belief, how is their social connections? How's in terms of, when we say spiritual, not necessarily faith, but their beliefs, their values. So these are something that sometimes may be missed out in, you know, a more tertiary based setting like a public or private hospital. And then from the individual, we then have to look at the interpersonal, so their connections and relationships with family, with, say, the neighbours, with their colleagues, and then to a large extent, the groups or communities they are in. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, say, yeah, within the workforce, you know, or say within the extended family. And the lastly that we want to look at is actually the systemic factors. So social policies that influence the way they access these services and recovery process.
Mm.
So that's where we say, you know, all the socioeconomic factors come in, affordability, time, information. Yeah.
Yes. Anita, what about Yayasan Hasana? It's just a little bit of background on about what you do, and also how does mental health issues come into that?
So Yayasan Hasana is the foundation of Khazanah National, and we partner with different NGOs and social enterprises in the area of education, community development, environment, arts, heritage and culture, as well as knowledge. But particularly in community development, what we're trying to do is look for community-based solutions to issues, mm-hmm. because we know that in communities that we work with, particularly in the B40, they have multiple issues and multiple complexities in the challenges they face. So it's not only about income or poverty, mm-hmm. but there's also things that that contribute towards poverty. Like, for example, if they're under a lot of stress, then can they be able to function in the workplace in order to earn an income?
Mm-hmm.
Vice versa, if you don't have enough income, then you don't have enough access to different facilities, including mental health
services. So it becomes like a vicious cycle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what we're trying to do is bring as many different types of services to the community and look for a community-based solution. And that's why we're working with SOLS, because they are looking at that. So while we wait for tertiary and policies to work, then we want to work as much as possible ground up. And where mental health is concerned, we see that a lot, of course, in B40 communities for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both about the environment they're living,
mm-hmm.
as well as the access they can get. And then how do we do two things? One is to prevent it as much as possible through awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is, then if something happens, then how to provide some kind of intervention before it becomes more extreme, because that helps them to solve other issues that the community is facing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're trying to do, but we work with different partners with different capabilities.
All right, okay. Obviously, you do work with Souls Health. What are some of the other partners that you work with? Just to give us an idea of also the breadth, I guess, and of the approaches or the ways in, you know?
So our primary concern is actually addressing poverty. So a lot of the work that we do will start off with some kind of income generating projects, because ultimately without money, you know, there's not a lot of services or things that you can improve in your life or access.
Mm-hmm.
Once we focus on that, then we also look at community empowerment. So that's quite an important aspect of the community development projects that we do, because as NGOs or foundations or even government, we can't be there forever.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to support the community members to find either peer support or to be able to establish a network where they can at least have access to different kind of organisations at the community level. So so we've done that through, like, for example, one of our income generating partners, they started off with giving microfinancing and then increasing the income.
Yep.
But after that, then they identify a few women who were potential leaders. And then they cultivate that leadership skills to be able to then to help the community to address their own issues.
Mm.
Because that's more sustainable, because there's only so much funds that you can pour in into any. So, and that's why we like working with organizations like Souls, because they're looking at community based.
Mm.
And because we're trying to reach out to so many communities to scale, and if no foundation can scale and do nationwide, as idealistic as they sound, without creating this bottoms up kind of approach.
Yeah, and you can have a sort of ripple effect.
Exactly.
As well,
yeah. That's the target.
Yeah. Alicia, I'm sure that even though Souls, primarily because you're a mental health center, but I'm sure that when you engage with the communities, you can't just go in there and talk mental health, right? Mm-hmm. How do you start having these conversations?
Okay. One of the things I think in terms of mental health in Malaysia, and this is across all socioeconomic, I think the main issue of mental health is the stigmatization of mental health. So, when we first opened in 2015, we actually provided free services, there weren't much take up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because then we looked at, what are the barriers to accessing these services. So it's a lot of it is about to do the information. So the stigmatization comes from ignorance. So meaning doesn't matter what education level you are at. This is not something that is taught in schools. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think it's something that, you know, that's part of the curriculum where we know how do you identify if you have a mental health issue or challenges, let alone disorders. And then there's also the prejudices that we see. People thinking mental health is someone crazy or someone not functional, not competent. And of course, the discrimination. And this is where we see the B40 communities have like issue with it when it comes to access to income. And now they have, if they have mental health issues, challenges, it becomes like a double whammy or triple whammy where they're already struggling on a daily basis to put food on the table, to take care of the kids. And now when these mental health issues come in, then it kind of, like Anita mentioned, right, it perpetuates that problem. So when we go to the communities, we try as much as possible to speak to the community leaders, find representation in the community itself, from mothers, fathers, youth, children, going into their community events. So doing observations, interviews, and also home visits. So to really understand what is that daily circumstances, to see, to go into a PPR community, like, 700-800 square feet meter with 10 people living in there, three generations, maybe one parent who has a chronic illness, who can't work, and older siblings have to quit their job to take care of their siblings. So these are the things that, as a mental health practitioner, we ensure that it's not just waiting for the clients or the people with lived experience to come to us and we provide the service, but going to them, going to these communities, and at the very least for that half a day or, you know, whatever time that we spend, that we really immerse ourselves in their daily life and really be part of it. So this is something very, very important, because without that, you can't... You can't develop a really effective program, because then it will be like a gap between what the evidence says. Evidence says depression has to be done A, B, C, D, but their life circumstances may not enable them to truly benefit from it. Yeah. So addressing those gaps really, really, really important for us. So we do it through what we call the community health needs assessment, and we send these people out. So like I said, interviews, observations, of course, the basic research and really working with our partners. And this is where, with Hasana, it enabled us to work with other partners who are doing work, particularly from in the other social aspect as well. So not just mental health.
One of the big things that we realised working in different communities, we've worked in 8 or 9 communities on different initiatives, is the importance of gaining the trust of the community. So most communities that you would meet, typically, especially in KL, have already encountered a lot of NGOs, call touch and go. And so if you're going to talk about something as sensitive as your state of being or health, right, you're not going to talk about it to any Tom, Dick and Harry, basically, who comes. So you need to give it a lot of time. And so we encourage our partners to really do a lot of community engagement before you even do the intervention.
Yeah.
Then they understand where you're coming from, and then you can really start your program.
Absolutely. So, but how much and how long do you engage with them, and to what extent before you can even introduce the idea of interventions? Because there are so many other issues that have to be addressed. I'm sure, perhaps lack of employment within the family, perhaps substance abuse with one of the family. I mean, it feels like it would be a lot. And so how do you help them address all of those? Is it your place to address that?
Okay, obviously we are limited, you know, because we focus more on, say, you know, in terms of the mental health issues. So this is where, when it's highlighted to us, it's very important, the signposting, meaning sending them to that referral point or another, you know, service provider. So that's the aspect that, we have a term for it, a case management. So when we work with an individual family, we're not just looking at the mental health aspect, but we also look at all these other factors, and how do we encourage them and help them get the right resources, information, and reference points. So I think this is the three aspects of the case management that is, I guess, above and beyond, say, a typical individual like therapy or assessment in a private centre. So that engagement sometimes does take, on a community level, it could be 6 months to a year from a family.
To be expected.
So it depends on the size of the project as well, the scale of the project.
Okay.
And even then, it's ongoing. Oh, so as we, and that's why we try as best as possible to be in the community and doing more in-depth work rather than, you know, a touch-and-go basis. Mm. So usually we try as best possible to stay with one within one community and build that really connection and trust.
Yes. Yeah. So we'll try to explore a little bit more about a particular project that Souls Health and Yayasan Hasana are working together on in a PPR community. Because, problems or issues don't get wrapped up and resolved neatly. And then, you know, even in our lives, right? They run on, new challenges come up. And so how do you build that resilience in a community to ensure they are empowered and they don't always need to depend on assistance. In the studio with me for the Mind Matters show today is Alicia Othman, Managing Director of Souls Health, and Anita Ahmad, Senior Vice President, Head of Community Development, Yayasan Hasana. We're discussing community mental health. If you have any thoughts or questions, you can call us 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao. It's the Mind Matters series today, and we're talking about community mental health together with Alicia Othman, Managing Director from Souls Health, and Anita Ahmad, Senior Vice President, Head of Community Development, Yayasan Hasana. If you have any questions or thoughts you'd like to share on the issues we are discussing today, our lines are open 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Anita, we've been talking primarily about B40 communities, lower income communities, because of the challenges that they would face in terms of accessing services and needs. But really, does that leave out perhaps the M40 who still face issues as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as Alicia mentioned, when it comes to mental health, it goes across the board.
Yes.
So I think the main difference is how fast and how much can you afford to get access, largely. And because I think in terms of awareness as well, I mean, I speak openly about it and most people are not comfortable with it and they tend to resort to other methods. So even for the M40 as well. And then there are those, in fact, I was just speaking to somebody today and she's like saying like, she's just above the B40, therefore she's not even entitled to certain bantuans.
Right.
Just
yes.
Because it's just a little bit, right? And she can just make it and everything else she doesn't already have
that's
access
right.
to.
Mm.
So it is a concern. So that's why I think organizations like Souls and others are talking about, and including Ministry of Health is becoming more and more open about talking about mental health.
Mm.
So it's great to see Ministry of Health having campaigns, even Ministry of Women, Family, Community Development, because it's starting to be normalised, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But certainly, it's not something that is only affecting the B40.
Yeah.
But I think with the B40, particularly with pockets of where they live, can create a bigger impact. So if it's PPRs, there's a particular reason why they may have even higher stresses than others.
Mm.
So it's not only accessibility, but the whole surrounding, the cramped environment.
Yeah.
Because the PPR was always meant to be a transit home. It was not meant to be a permanent home. That comes with a lot of other issues in terms of space, in terms of playing space for children to really stress.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have an overcrowded house, then what they're doing is that they are wandering around. So quite a number of times when we try to do youth programs, you can't find them because they're just out. If you're talking about the M40, there's a little bit more access to those kind of other sort of resting kind of things that can make them relax a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So be it like being able to go to parks. So one of the communities that we worked with in Yayasan Chowkit, they had never even been to KLCC even though they're so near.
Mm.
So even that we take for granted, that whole accessibility is far more than that.
Yeah.
M40 has a little bit more, but therapy is expensive.
Yeah.
And it's at least, for private, it's 300 ringgit per hour minimum.
Yeah,
if you need a series, even an M40 can't afford that.
That's right.
Yeah.
But how do you reach the M40 groups then, Alicia? Because, in a way, if you work with within PPR communities, you're engaging with them as a unit.
Yeah.
Those who are in need of help within the M40 bracket could be very disparate.
Yep.
How would you reach them?
So we do a lot of in terms of social media, particularly to address the stigma, right? To provide information, and we also do a lot of talks with employers, to providing the right information for them to select also the right providers for themselves or for their families. Mm. And we also started a website with the support of CIMB Islamic Bank, Reaching Online, where we actually have a directory of all the mental health service providers and also a basic mental screening. So this is mainly in English and BM. So it would be more of the M40, type of information that they get. They can Google it and they can have access to that information.
The touch points that they would come into contact with. Yeah.
And actually the clients that we see at our centre itself, about 40 to 50% is from the M40. Because as I think Anita mentioned, they do have that, access to it. So, but to get to a private centre or private hospital is still beyond their reach. Mm. So a lot of them still go to the public hospitals. And we also work with some of the public hospitals to get referrals, especially for cases that are not higher risk.
Yeah.
And usually in a public hospital, this would be, the waiting list is much longer for
them. That's right. Yeah.
So not just ourselves, but there are also other mental health NGOs out there. They're also doing a lot of good work, like MMHA, MIASA. They provide also subsidized services to particularly the upper B40 and M40. So that's usually the profile of people that we see coming to the centres.
Mm.
Yeah. Whilst I think the B30 would be the ones that need us to go to the communities really reach out through programs.
Okay.
Having said that, I think that's very much focused on the urban area. Now, if you're talking about outside of KL, I mean, this is part of the continuous conversation that Hasana has with most of our partners. Okay, we're going to start in KL, then what next? What about access in other parts? But we start off with something as a pilot, and then we discuss about how do we expand that. And one of the things that Hasana does also is try to create networks. So I've been having a lot of conversation with Alicia about how can we capitalize with other NGOs and bring it together, and then long term, how do we also raise awareness not only in the urban areas?
What would you see are unique issues if we are looking beyond the urban centres?
I think it would be quite similar again to the lack of information, awareness. So a lot of them, they do not quite understand in terms of mental health. Usually, it's often that they would see alternative practitioners like a BOMO, not thinking that it's a problem that needs to be attended to. So again, it's stigmatization. I cannot overemphasize this. I think particularly urban and rural, but in the rural, it's mainly the lack of information and also the access to services. It's just not enough. Even in KL, I would say it's still inadequate in terms of the right having enough practitioners. So if you go outside of KL, they would have to go to the bigger cities like Penang or JB. But even then, I think it's still not inadequate. And this is where I think community development approach comes in, because we need to do a lot more of capacity building of the people in the community, like the community leaders. So a lot of things like mental health screening, basic information, these people in the communities can be trained to have that information and to do that kind of referral. Whilst now everything goes to the either medical or psychological practitioner, and that's
Which is overburdened
anyway. Exactly. So I think a lot of it, this discussion with Hasana is that capacity building, especially for those in the social work arena. There's so many good NGOs already on the ground. Even for us mental health practitioners, we're so limited. We can't be everywhere, right? Yep. So I think I'd like to use this example of Dr. Dixon Chibanda in Zimbabwe, how he addressed
the grandmother,
the friendship bench. So that's how in terms of addressing, you can't train enough psychiatrists, but you can train these grandmothers at the park.
Yeah, I mean, that's a country where I think they have so few psychiatrists, they can't rely on mental health professionals.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
So the friendship bench is where they sort of provide just very basic
low intervention CBT. But trained by
and
the psychiatrist,
grandmothers in the community,
exactly, because that's what looking at the resource and strength, because they have these grandmothers sitting at the park and people trust them because they have that that warm connection. And so it's just training them and providing them a bit of the skill. So then, you know, as a community, they're taking care of, yes. of their own. So yeah. I think that's something that mm. we would like to aspire working with Hasana and yeah. other providers.
Anita, is Hasana working with its partners, its community partners, specifically in that vein, you know, looking at community leaders and working with them?
Yeah, so the first level I said before is that we will do one direct intervention because we also have to get to know the community. It takes time because what we found is that each community has its own dynamics and its own politics that you have to overcome. It can be quite different even though it's a neighbouring community. We have seen where one community is very smart, next community is like competitive. Mm-hmm. So then we need to spend time through one partner, through that intervention, and then we can start thinking about community leadership because we also need to recognise who the leaders are that we want to build the capacity because not all are ready. Mm-hmm. And so that's one. And I think with that also, some community leaders can also then be examples or will have access to different information. So when it comes to mental health, I'm thinking that, you know, what would be ideal is that if you can build the capacity for them to understand. So yes, they are the reference point, but they also recognise that certain behaviours mean certain things. Because I think that's the tricky part about mental health. It's a whole long mm-hmm. spectrum of what it means from your bipolar. But the starting point, even anxiety, what people usually say is that just get over yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, even culturally, right? Mm-hmm. Just say like jangan layan sangat. Yep. Or there's mm-hmm. so many negative things you say to address that feeling, mm-hmm. rather than recognizing that it's a normal feeling, it's okay. So as a leader, they would need to be able to expose to those different kind of things. And yep. so it's one is training, which is the formal training. What we're getting to do with our leaders as well is to organize for them to do an analysis about what their community needs, mm-hmm. and then for them to address it themselves. Mm-hmm. And then we build that capacity to do that. It's slowly happening. So for other projects, even in Sabah, for example, we have established women, what you call women support groups. So then as they have a peer support group, so that's working quite well. And mm. that project specifically is looking at reduction of gender-based violence. Mm. But now they know where to go. Yep. They know, because we've also been training counsellors, that they know that there are counsellors available. So, and first thing is also the peer support, because even if you were to face something that's quite critical in mm-hmm. mental health, you yes. need to have a lot of exchanges. Even me, as yeah. I know quite a bit, I still go to Alicia. Am I thinking it right? Am I analysing it right as well? Mm. So what more at the community level? But it's possible. It's slow, but possible.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you talk about community leaders, is it down to the level of grandmothers, like what they're doing in Zimbabwe?
Mm, it could be. I think it's recognizing that they're leaders as well. So I think in Malaysia, we tend to think that leaders are MPs. we do have that. So what we see is that so some of the programs that we're trying to do with the youth is recognizing you see one hero there, you know, like suddenly yes. very upper. So yeah. then mm. we say, oh, that's potential because he's showing or he or she is showing potential. Mm. So not necessarily like appointed. And because we have an appointment system, then we really need to look at who are the natural leaders actually,
of course,
or who have that potential.
Okay. When we come back from the break, we will look at the project between Souls Health and Yayasan Hasana. This is our Mind Matter series, and we are looking at community mental health today with Alicia Othman, Managing Director of Souls Health, and Anita Ahmad, Senior Vice President, Head of Community Development at Yayasan Hasana. If you have any questions or thoughts, you can call us 0377 332 900. You can also WhatsApp 0187898899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a WhatsApp message that I'll get to after the market update. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoik. It's the Mind Matter series today where we talk about everything related to mental health. And today we are exploring community mental health. In the studio with me, Alicia Othman, Managing Director of Souls Health, and Anita Ahmad, Senior Vice President, Head of Community Development from Yayasan Hasana. If you have any thoughts, you can call us 0377 332 900, WhatsApp 0187898899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. A message over here on WhatsApp pointing out, you know, some reports of suicide among college students and how it is potentially related to stress among young people. Alicia, is suicide an issue that concerns you with the communities that you work with?
Yes, definitely. I think it's particularly with the project with Hasana, the project's called Keluarga Akrab Mencapai Impian. Mm-hmm. And it's a strengthening families program between the adolescents and parents. So if we're talking about youth mental health, we definitely cannot escape, you know, this topic of suicide, self-harm behavior, substance use. A lot of the so-called, you know, most parents would consider the social issues. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is important because when we talk about particularly the age of these adolescents, communication is one of the things, the highest need in terms of trying to, you know, forming their identity, mm-hmm. trying to be accepted. And for parents and families, I think that transition is something not as easy, you know, from because a child below 10, you can just give it a simple direction. Whereas mm-hmm. with an adolescent, you need to kind of rationalize, have that conversation. So what across the 6 years we've been working with a lot of the, you know, communities and even the clients that come to our center, what we notice, regardless of whether there's some suicidal thoughts, self-harm, whether the diagnosis is anxiety, depression, a lot of it goes back to the household dysfunction. Yeah, particularly when we're working with the communities. So it's how do we build that healthy space within the family to be able to talk about it? So not so much as an 17 year old, for example, mm-hmm. right? I have issues at school. I'm mm-hmm. bullied at school, so I feel helpless or hopeless. I come back and try to tell my parents, like, hey, you know, this guy's bullying me, and I feel helpless. You know, feel like maybe what life is not worth living. But often parents do not know how to react to that. So this is also something that we want to kind of, in our program, try to build skills of how do you address these difficult issues. You know, so talking by being open and talking about it will help the parents to know, okay, I'm here, I know you're struggling, so would you like to share more? How do we deal with this together? And not so much as trying to solve the adolescents or the teenagers' problem, but trying to be that support. And this is where a lot of times we find that youth, when they come to a point where they have suicidal thoughts or depressive symptoms, very often they have that lacking in terms of that connection either with the family or that peer social support. So mm-hmm. I think this is important for us to look at when it comes to community programs. How do we start having that conversation rather than hiding it? Just hiding it and not addressing it. Mm-hmm. So very often we find the family say, oh, I didn't realize my daughter or son, you know, have these thoughts. And we see this in the Kami program. Mm-hmm. The parents were shocked, like, oh, I didn't, you know, my daughter seems
normal.
Seems okay, normal. Happy. She's okay at school. Yeah. She's compliant with work, mm-hmm. you know, like. But then as we do the mental health screening, mm. as we run the programs, they start disclosing. Mm. So this is something that as I think families and community, we need to acknowledge that, you know, youth mental health is now a global issue. You will see a lot of countries from public health to even, I think, the World Economic Forum is starting to talk about youth mental health. It is a growing issue and a concern. But we need to start having the conversation.
Yeah, not brush it off as growing yes. pains, which exactly. is how I think we grew up thinking of these so-called problems of for youths and young people. Anita, you want to explain a little bit more about the Kami program, the Keluarga Akrab Mencapai Impian, right? So how do you get families to be part of this?
So the program is really why Hasana got interested into the program is because, I mean, if you had an idea of some of the challenges in mental health, like access and the cost. So then Seoul said that they were piloting a community-based assessment, because that's the first thing. Is like, it's even like we're talking about adolescent. How do you identify that the adolescent is going through certain symptoms? That you can intervene quite early if you know there's a change of pattern, change of behaviour or something you can recognise. So when Source came out and saying, like, we have a system where you can do community-based, so whether it's through families or through health professionals that know how to assess at community level, then we thought that was quite positive. So the programme is intended to do that. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that, again, that it becomes a bottoms-up approach and that the community doesn't wait too long before they can, you know, before it comes extreme. It's been quite challenging because, again, we actually had to work together to kind of look at what's the best way of doing it. So it was not a matter of just taking a model, which is they are adopting from the UK, and they just plonk it here. Mm-hmm. There was a lot about, you know, understanding, okay, what the program. So number one, so the program first the original program was supposed to take over, like, say, 12 weeks. Yeah. And then when you look at the community, they have no time for this.
Yes, 12 weeks.
Yeah,
that's right.
So, and their attention span is also quite different. It's adult learning. And then it's bringing families together. So a lot of the parents that we work with are working 2 or 3 jobs. So you have to, you know, make sure that, you know, their time and their children's time, their willingness. So it's a lot of those kind of things. But with that, we learned a lot. So Souls learned a lot in terms of, okay, when you're talking about PPR, these are the challenges. So how do we then create this tool without compromising its quality, but also listening to the community and their time.
Yeah, so, their needs. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what we've been working together quite a bit.
Okay. So what does it look like now? Is it still 12 weeks?
So now it's over. It depends on the community. So this is why the engagement is important, to know what is that availability. So what we've done with the previous community was we do 2 solid full days with a follow-up of a group support. So whereby then we have that group support with the parents and the youth, and also identify like parent leaders and youth leaders to kind of also continue the work. So this is where the adaptation is something necessary, because we want to customize it into the needs of the community, and always developing it together with them. So this is also the other aspect of that's slightly different than if you go to a hospital. It's like, this is how it is, take it or leave it. Whereas with them, we need to kind of co-develop it with them, with the different stakeholders, and see what is the best fit and model that works for them. And of course, honestly, you know, not 100% attendance for sure, because of, you know, because of the scheduling and all that. But we try as best possible to get, you know, within, say, in one community, at least about 20 to 30 participants, you know, about 15 parents and 15 youth readily to be there. So this is where I think that discussion with the community leaders and official and unofficial leaders needs to be ongoing, and because they are the ones who will now then take on the commitment. So the community leaders are the ones who then feedback to us, like, oh, next weekend is a good weekend to have the group support, or they have school holidays, so everybody will be away. So this is something that it cannot just be like a template per se. It needs to have that two-way conversation with the community.
And how has the reception been from the parents and the youths?
Well, from this pilot with Hasana, what we see is that some of these parents have attended, you know, other parenting talks and workshops from other programs, which is, you know, quite available, I think, with a lot of PPRs. So what the feedback from, I think, the communities that we're working with is really that skill on how to address, like I mentioned earlier, the really tough issues, like, and also addressing, especially for the youth, is having that space. Having that safe space where they are allowed to express, you know, their issues, to express how they really feel, and having the parents listen and also build a skill on how to not, you know, just negatively react. Or have that reaction that is a bit more engaging for the adolescents. So I think it has helped them in terms of understanding the family much better, and also to focus on a lot of the misconceptions of how good family mental health is. Because a lot of the community, a lot of the parents, you know, they're not different than the other parents. They want to give the best to their families. So that's why they're working hard. And often they say that, you know, I feel it's never enough, and the kids are not, you know, the children are not reciprocating or not following, you know, my instructions. So then, and I give, whilst we are trying to say, look, there are a lot of other activities. For example, one of the things is eating together, like try to have a dinner or a meal together. It sounds something that we take for granted with some families, but to them it's like, oh. So
it never even occurred to them, right?
Okay,
something simple like that.
Yeah, something as simple.
But is it possible for them? I mean, like you said, Anita, they are working often 2-3 jobs, you know, from morning to night, different shifts and all of that. And
so, but I think it's knowing that that's important, and that's important for the family. So it's how you prioritize. So of course, any family wouldn't say like it's every meal or anything, but at least say once a week or no. And then, you know, we all have our own rules, right? Put on the phone away. Those simple things, because going back to the adolescence issue, is about communications. So a lot of, I think, young people are not feeling that they're heard. Mm. So this one space and putting aside, and then they see that their parents are also prioritizing also. So that actually attributes to your general mental well-being.
Mm. Yeah.
Not before it gets into like
addressing problem, specific addressing, issues.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I can give an example of, there was this this family. She has the mother has six children, and she's, I would say, that the tough lady. You know, she's always somehow screaming instructions here and there, like always on top of her voice. But she's fun. You know, when she's in a group, she's always very fun, very vivacious. So I think I found that feedback from her was very important. She said some of the other programs, when it comes to parenting or family, always want to change, wanting to change her personality, like, oh, I have to be this mother who's very gentle, and
there is an idea of what a mother should be.
Yeah, so what she said, but I'm not that kind of person. I'm a tough lady. I've raised my child my own, you know, that kind of thing. So she's like, but what the program taught her is to use the skills to still maintain her personality, but to use the skills, the words that are more encouraging, to listen, to really have that family, you know, conversations rather than just, you know, screaming and being, So I think for her, that really shifted her perspective, that it's not changing that to go into a particular mold, not to hide herself, but to also learn how to just be that better parent.
Yeah.
So it was as simple as that. But we felt, at least in the group, we felt like, oh, okay, that was really impactful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And Anita, what kind of impact would Hasana want to see from programs like this?
Well, in the long term, I mean, this, we just piloted, so we are still talking about the next stage. I think the first thing is that they are recognizing that the stigma is removed, that it's okay to feel whatever you're feeling. Secondly, is that they actually know where they can go to. Access. So even though, like, for example, the community-based approach might not be there, but at least they know they can go to schools. There is an organization that offers these services, and that there are also others, because they also have their network, and there's that can be worked out. And then the third thing overall is that each community would understand that mental health is something that they can address, that it's not a helpless thing, and that there would be a community-based program which would recognise this and address it immediately. And in the most ideal state is that there is certain organisations that can do regular outreach, so that, because transport itself can be a problem, so if we can have certain outreach where certain organisations are able to go to the community on a regular basis and have certain case management, then that would be great in the long term.
I mean, Alicia, when it comes specifically to mental health interventions, what do you do then? Because after you've done the capacity building and all of that, what services do you offer when it comes to mental health services?
At the centre, we provide psychological assessment, psychotherapy and counselling, and that covers individual as well as family therapy as well. So that's mainly for the clients who are able to
come to you.
Come to our centre at Sungai Besi. Other than that, we work with also other NGO partners in terms of providing, like Anita mentioned, a drop-in service. So like one day at the centre. So it's a bit more, you know, cost-effective as well as convenient for the communities that we work with. So it could be like an orphanage, or like we are working with WAO, our partner there, and also together with some of the companies, we also provide services for their staff, and you know, a lot of these talks and workshops for companies as well.
We're running out of time, but can you leave us with a final message about community mental health issues, Anita?
I like the one that actually Soul says, it's okay not to feel okay. It's okay not to be okay on this. It's fine. And only you have yourself to judge, and there is support out there, but you just got to work a little bit harder. And on our side, we're trying also to reach out to you as well, so it goes both ways.
Alicia?
For us, we believe the health of the individual resides in the community. So for us to be able to prevent and promote better mental health, it is a collective responsibility of us in the community to provide that support. So, you know, and again, I think it starts with breaking the stigma within the community.
Yeah, that's right. And every alternate month, starting with this month, we'll be featuring a different aspect of community mental health together with Souls Health right here on this Mind Matters series. So we will sort of try to unpack the kinds of issues that you work with the communities to address, the various socioeconomic issues, and of course, specifically focusing on low and sort of the, you called it the high B40s? Do I have that right?
So B60. B40, 60%.
Because as we discussed, we shouldn't leave out the M40 in particular as well in terms of the challenges that they face and how it affects mental well-being and mental health. So you've been listening to Mind Matters right here on Health and Living. Together with me was Alicia Othman, Managing Director from Souls Health, and Anita Ahmad, Senior Vice President, Head of Community Development from Yayasan Hasana, right here on Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.